Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Sukkah Daf Mem Aleph. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur on Daf Mem Aleph. About halfway down, you will see the Mishnah in the middle of the page. The Mishnah deals with the taking of the lulav in the time of the Beis HaMikdash and the mitzvah of lulav that applies outside the Beis HaMikdash. The Mishnah will feature the takona of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. In the absence of the Beis HaMikdash, we take the lulav 7 days in our homes, wherever we live, being that that was what was done in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, in the Beis HaMikdash. So in memory of that which was done, that which we call Zecher LaMikdash, so we take it nowadays, the entire holiday. From the Torah standpoint, though, it was expected of us to take the lulav to fulfill the mitzvah only on the first day. The Mishnah. Borishona hayolulav nital b'mikdash shiva u'bamedina yom echad. Originally, the lulav was taken in the Beis HaMikdash 7 days. Sukkot is a 7-day holiday. B'medina means outside the Beis HaMikdash. Rashi says Yerushalayim is also considered the Medina. It was taken only 1 day. Mishachora Beis HaMikdash. Hiskin Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai. Upon the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai instituted, now there are two halachas that are referred to in this Mishnah regarding takonos of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Elsewhere, the Mishnayos list more of his rulings, his takonos. Here we see two of them. And what are they? One, Shelulav Nital b'medina shiva, zecher l'mikdash. The lulav shall be taken 7 days outside the Beis HaMikdash. Nowadays there is no more Beis HaMikdash. Is as a commemoration of what was done in the Beis HaMikdash. And a second takona that's not related to the topic of lulav, v'shiyeh yom hanef kulo aser. Yom hanef, translated, will be the day of waving. The day of waving is a reference to the day the Korban Omer was brought. The Korban Omer was a grain offering, specifically a barley offering, barley grain offering, that was offered on the 16th of Nisan, essentially on the second day of Pesach. And through offering the Omer, all the new grains, the grains that had developed over the winter preceding Pesach, and were now harvested, those grains up till the 16th of Nisan were forbidden. And the term used for that is chodosh, literally the new grains. Upon the offering of the Korban Omer in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, that was the, what we call in Hebrew, the matir, that which allows the consumption of the new a crop of grains. The 16th of Nisan, hence, is the day on which the Omer offering was offered. In the absence of the Beis HaMikdash, there was no more grain offering. So he ruled that the new grains are not to be eaten the entire 16th of Nisan. In other words, you'd have to wait till the 17th of Nisan before you'd be allowed to eat the new grains. In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, the Omer offering was the matir. in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash, so there's no Omer offering. So he instituted that the 16th of Nisan is forbidden, even though in the time of the Beis HaMikdash on the 16th of Nisan, the Omer was offered and it would have, the grains would have been mutter in the latter part of that day. Now there is no Beis HaMikdash, so the entire 16th of Nisan is forbidden in the Chodosh, the new grains. Our Mishnah mentioned that Rabbi Yochanan Zaki instituted a 7-day lulav mitzvah in honor or in commemoration of the Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara asks, what is the source for that, for making, for commemorating the Beis HaMikdash? And on the side of our Gemara, we noted under our topic heading, Mokor Sheyesh Lasu Zecher LeMikdash, a source that one has to do something, has to do things to commemorate the Beis HaMikdash that once was. Omer of Yochanan, or the Gemara's question, Menolon de Abdinon Zecher LeMikdash, from where do we know that we establish things to commemorate the Beis HaMikdash? Omer of Yochanan, the Omer Kral, there is a pasuk that says, Ki ale aruko loch umimakoisach erpoech numashem, ki nidocha koruloch, tzion hi doresh ein lo. Without getting into the literal translation of the pasuk, what we want to do, and we do this very often in Gemara markings, is simply to focus on the main point. And the end of the pasuk said, Tzion, which is a reference in our context to the Beis HaMikdash, there is no one seeking it out. No one is mentioning or commemorating it. And we understand from this, Doresh Ein Lo Michlal Debaya Drisha. The prophet Yirmiyahu was describing a mournful situation that no one was seeking out Zion, indicating that it is to be sought out, and we do that in the form of that which commemorates the Beis HaMikdash. V'shiyehe Yom Hanef, my taima. Why did Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai forbid the entire 16th of Nisan in consuming new grains? The Gemara answers, Mehera Yibona Beis HaMikdash. We hope that the Beis HaMikdash will be built any day, literally, quickly. And upon the reconstruction of the Beis HaMikdash, so things are going to go back to the way they were. And what does that entail? That entails the offering of the Omer. In the absence of the Beis HaMikdash, so, of course we eat new grains, but you might ask, well, what was matir the new grains if you don't have the Omer offering? So Rashi makes a presentation, and we should learn the Rashi together. The Rashi on the Mishnah, Vishye Yom Honef, Yom Honef is the day of waving, we said before, Shel Omer. In offering the Omer, there was a waving of the bowl containing the flour for the Omer offering, and that day is Dainutez Zayin B'Nisan, the 16th of Nisan, Kulo Osur B'Chodosh, the entire 16th was rendered forbidden in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash in consuming the new grains. U'ba'od HaMikdash Kayim Mishikorav Omer Hoyu Ochlun Chodosh Bobayo, when the Beis HaMikdash was around, on the 16th itself they would eat the new grains, they would be allowed to partake of the new grains at the point that the Omer was offering. Omer was offering during the daytime of the 16th. Kidachtiv ad haviyachem, that the prohibition is ad, until haviyachem, until you bring the Omer offering. But once it's brought on the 16th day of Nisan, the 16th daytime, you can eat the new grains. Ukshachara v'samig habayis, upon the destruction of the temple, mutar min ha-toyro mishir ha-mizrach. This might sound ironic, but in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash, from the Torah standpoint, the new grains are mutter at dawn of the 16th. Kidomar b'menachis. Heir Mizrach really is the time that the sky becomes light in the east. So from that point in time, which is pre-sunrise, the new grains are mutter. The new, we say pre-sunrise of the 16th. And how do we know that? One pasuk says, until the very day, Dahainu Heir Mizrach. That's the time of daylight, of daybreak. The Kosev Echad Omer, Ad Haviachem. Another pasuk doesn't say, Ad Esmayom, until the dawn of the 16th, but it says, until you bring the Omer offering. HaKesad. How do you resolve these two verses? Because one says that the new grains are mutter earlier than the other pasuk indicates. So the Gemara resolves. The Rashi explains, Bizman Di'ika Omer, when there is an Omer offering to be brought, then Ad Haviachem. Then we wait till it's brought. And that means only in the, let's say, daytime hours of the 16th will it become mutter. Not at the crack of dawn. Ubizman Deleka Omer, when there's no Omer to be brought, Ad Etzem. Means until the day starts, the beginning of the day, daybreak, which is an earlier time, an earlier hour. And that is as far as the Torah level requirement. The Osir Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai Aleihem Kol Hayom, Kedivah First Time with Gemara. But Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, he took measures to prohibit the entire 16th day in eating of the Omer. And eating of the new grains. And the Gemara will explain. So we started the Gemara in raising the question of why did he prohibit the entire day, when in fact, from the Torah standpoint, that the crack of dawn of the 16th, it is mutter. So the Gemara explains, we are anticipating the immediate rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. That's Meheru Yibona Beis HaMikdash. And upon the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash, you wait for the offering of the Omer to take place. Not at the crack of dawn, the Yomru, but people will think. Eshtakeid, last year, when there was still no Beis HaMikdash, Milo Achanu Beheir Mizrach, did we not eat upon the appearance of light in the east? Hashto Naminecho, well, this year too. Okay, there's a Beis HaMikdash, that's very nice, but last year we ate at the crack of dawn, so let's eat this year at the crack of dawn. Ve'inu lo yadi, but they, the public, don't realize that Shakei de lo have a Beis HaMikdash. Last year, before there was a Beis HaMikdash, there was still no Beis HaMikdash. Heir Mizrachitir, the appearance of light in the east, what we refer to as the crack of dawn, that was the time it became mutter. Hashto diiko Beis HaMikdash, but now, this year, when there is a Beis HaMikdash, Omer Matir, you really need to have the offering of the Omer. So what did Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai do so as to prevent this mistake, i.e., a situation where there is now a Beis HaMikdash and they cannot eat at the crack of dawn, by getting them used to having the entire 16th Usher, the next year, what's going to happen? There's going to be a Beis HaMikdash and the law for the Omer on the 16th. Okay, good. They're not going to end up eating the Omer prematurely at the crack of dawn, because they have been made used to the situation of having the entire 16th forbidden in eating the new grains. Now the Gemara gets into nitty-gritty details. What did the Gemara just say before? What was on Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai's mind? The anticipation of the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash and people not being aware of the change in circumstances. The Ivni Amos, when is the Beis HaMikdash is anticipated rebuilding that caused Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai to conclude what he concluded? The double underlining here represents, as we indicate on the side, shlavim, under our Mivneh heading. Mivneh is a structural note. These are shlavim, stages, levarer hashela, to clarify the question, the Ivni Beis HaMikdash Emas, when is the Beis HaMikdash anticipating, when is its building anticipated? Shua Bosis Lohavin Mima Chosha Shubion Zakai. The basis means the basis. This is the basis of understanding what was Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai worried about. L'sakein to institute sheyoyim hanef yeh kulo osur b'chodesh, to prohibit the entire 16th. What are the circumstances that would lead Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai to concern himself and ban and forbid the entire 16th and the eating of the chodesh of the new grains? So we go through stages in analysis. E lema, we continue in the Gemara, first double underline, E lema the Ivni Beshitzar. If he, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, was anticipating it's being rebuilt on the 16th day proper, well, and what's gonna happen? The fear is that they're gonna eat at the crack of dawn. Well, they're all right. Hare hitir hei mizrach. The light in the sky in the east already was matir. Because the Beis HaMikdash being built later in the day, as Gemara says, the Ivni B'Shitz is built on the 16th during the day, so they're not doing anything wrong by eating the grains at that time. It became mutter for them at the crack of dawn. Ela, the Ivni B'Chamesar. What is anticipated? He was anticipating the possibility of its being built on the 15th of Nisan. If that's the case, mechatzos hayom ulahalon tishteri, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai should have made as a rule that the chodosh is osir from noon to, from up till noon time. But from noon onwards, there's no problem. If the case is the Beis HaMikdash would be built on the 15th, and that's what is on Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai's mind, so let the rule in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash simply state that the new grains are mutter at noon onwards, and not asr the whole day. And what's the significance of noontime? The Ha'atnan. We have a source that says, Horochikim, the people that lived far away from the Beis HaMikdash in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, Mutarin, are allowed to eat the new grains, Mechatzos Hayom Ulalon, from noon onwards. The Fishain based in Misatzlinbo, because the base in the court, who's in charge of seeing to it that the Omer is offered, they're not lazy. They will see to it that it will have been offered by noon. So if that scenario is what is on Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai's mind, in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash, simply say from noontime onwards it is mutter. The year that the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt, and it'll be built, let us say, on the 15th of Nisan, if that's what's on his mind, so allowing them to eat the new grains from noontime onwards on the 16th of Nisan would be fine, because the Omer will have been offered by that point. Loi, tzricha. What I need Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai's takana for is the Ivni Balela Inami Somach Lishkia Sachamo. Imagine a scenario where the Beis HaMikdash is built during the night between the 15th and 16th, or right before sundown at the end of the 15th. How much time will be available to harvest the barley grains and dry them out, make them into flour suitable as an offering? It takes a good few hours. In fact, it wouldn't be ready by noontime in that case. The Omer would at best be able to be offered late in the day of the 16th in that scenario. So Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai wasn't going to take any chances. And in anticipation of this scenario, of the Beis HaMikdash being rebuilt on the 15th of Nisan toward the end of the day or at the night into the 16th, where there wouldn't be enough time to get the Omer ready for it to be offered by noon. So he wanted people to get used to the idea of being prohibited in eating the new grains the entire 16th. Once again, in anticipation of this scenario, where the Omer that year would in fact be offered very late in the day on the 16th. So, to play it safe, he got them used to having the 16th as a day of Isser, of prohibition of the new grains. So far, this, we have noted in the Gemara, was approach number one. We asked a question at the beginning of this section, was why did he aser the entire 16th of Nisan? And now, a second approach. Rav Nachman bar Yitzhak Omar. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai b'shitas Rav Yehuda Omar. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, in banning the 16th of Nisan in its entirety, as far as consuming the Chodesh, is in concurrence with the approach taken by the Tana Rabbi Yehuda. The Omar, Rabbi Yehuda says, Min haTorah hu oser. From the Torah's standpoint, midoraisa, the 16th of Nisan, in the absence of the base Hamikdash, the entire 16th is oser midoraisa. This is a new approach. Up till now, and if you recall the Rashi we read on the Mishnah, we were led to believe that midoraisa, in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash, the new grains, the Chodosh, is mutter at the crack of dawn of the 16th. This approach, the Rabbi Yehuda approach that's presented by Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, says to the contrary, that from the Torah standpoint, the 16th is completely usher. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. Ad etzem hayom hazeh, that the new grains are forbidden until this very day. The yom is the 16th of Nisan. And ad itzumo shel yom means until the very essence of the day. The kosovar, and he is of the opinion, ad v'ad b'chlam. When the Torah says the word ad, until, means up till and including. So the Torah is saying up till the 16th and including the 16th, in the absence of an Omer offering, because the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, the new grains are usher. So Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, in ruling that the 16th, Yom HaNeif Kulo Usher, he's basically reflecting that which the Torah prohibits. The Gemara asks, Umi Sovar Le Kavosei, is it accurate to say that Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai holds like the Tana Rabbi Yehuda, v'amiflag poligalei? They argue. And notice, of course, that this question lasts a number of lines. The source in which we see the two names, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and Rabbi Yehuda, it says, Mishachorav Beis HaMikdash, Hiskin Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai sheyom honev kulu aser. Upon the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai instituted that the Yom HaNeif, that the 16th of Nisan, is completely usher in the new grains. And just to review and repeat ourselves, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai seems to be saying that the prohibition is based on a takona, something that he instituted. Amar lo Rabbi Yehuda, v'halo min haTorah hu usher. Why are you presenting it as something you instituted when it's something, the new grains, are also from the Torah standpoint. Without, in the absence of a Beis HaMikdash, the Torah prohibits the new grains. Dichtiv ad etzem hayom hazeh. That, and until this very day, the Torah tells us the new grains are usher, which means ad itzumo shel yom, until the very essence of the day. So our question is, how can you say, as you did at the bottom of Omid Aleph, that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is in agreement with Rabbi Yehuda, and that the 16th is also not as a rabbinic innovation, but as a Torah prohibition. How can you say that in the name of Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai as agreeing with Rabbi Yehuda when you see that they are at odds with one another? The Gemara explains, answers. Rabbi Yehuda hu dekotoi. Rabbi Yehuda in this source, in his response to Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, he, Rabbi Yehuda, made a mistake. Hu savar midorabonon ka'omar. Rabbi Yehuda in his reaction had understood Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai as prohibiting the new grains on the 16th from a rabbinic standpoint. Velohi, and that is not true. Rather, Mido Raisa Komar, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai's banning of the grains, of the new grains on the 16th, was from the Torah's perspective and not his own innovation. Question, Va'iskin Komar, but the expression in the source was that he, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, instituted the prohibition, indicating that it's only rabbinic. The Gemara explains, my hiskin, what does hiskin really mean? Dorash v'hiskin. He explained the pasuk that said ad etzem hayom hazeh to mean ad v'ad b'chlau. And through publicizing that, that's dorash, through publicizing that, it was hiskin, he was able to establish the entire 16th as being prohibited. But it's not that it's his innovation. He publicized it, publicized that which the Torah already had said is usur. And hence, like we explained in approach number two, in explaining Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, Yom Hanef Kulo Usur, we can accept Rav Nachman Ben Yitzchok's approach that we saw in approach number two, that Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai was conforming to Rabbi Yehuda, to his approach, that from the Torah's perspective, and if there's no Beis HaMikdash, the new grains are actually usur from at the beginning of the 16th, and only on the next day, the 17th, would they be mutter. We now have a Mishnah, and the topic that we've associated, topic heading on the side under our no say, the topic heading reads Netilas Lulav B'Shabbos. The general topic will be the issue of the taking of the lulav on Shabbos. Before we learn the new Mishnah, we glance at the side where we have a topic heading, the Nosei, where we've written Netilas Lulav B'Shabbos, the taking of the lulav on Shabbos. Many of you who are learning this Mishnah might be familiar with the contemporary practice of refraining from the lulav mitzvah on Shabbos. However, from the Torah's perspective, we are expected to take the lulav on Shabbos. We will see this in the Gemara's discussion. The Mishnah, Yom Tov HaRishon Shel Chag Shechal LiYois B'Shabbos. The first day of Chag. Chag is a term used very often as a reference to Sukkot. So the first day of Sukkot that falls out or coincides with Shabbos. Kol Ha'om Molichin Es Lulvehen LeBeis HaKnesses. Everyone would bring their lulavim on Erev Shabbos, the day before Sukkot, to the shul, to the synagogue. Carrying a lulav on Shabbos per se is not something that is allowed. You cannot carry items from one domain to another on Shabbos. So it had to be prepared in its ultimate place, the shul, from before Shabbos. And that's what the Mishnah said. L'mochros, the next day, mashkimen uboin kolecho vechod makiresh shelo v'notlo. The next day, on Shabbos day, everyone would get up early, go to the shul, and identify his own lulav and take it. But neishamru chachomim, the sages have said, ein odom yoytze yedei choyvaso biyom tov harishon belulavo shel chavero. The Mishnah itself uses the expression the chachomim said, but the truth is that it's based on the pasuk in the Torah, which says, lochem, ulakachtem lochem, it shall be your own. And that applies to the first day of Sukkot. as the pasuk indicates, ulakachtem lochem b'yom harishon, on the first day of Sukkot, so it must be yours. The Mishnah continues, ishar yomoy sachag, on the subsequent days of Sukkot, Adam yoytze yedei chavasu b'lulav shel chaver, a person can fulfill his lulav mitzvah with a borrowed lulav, with his friend's lulav. Rabbi Yossi omer yom tov harishon shel chag, shechal yos b'shabbos. A situation like we saw at the beginning of the Mishnah, the first day of Sukkot coinciding with Shabbos, v'shochach v'hoitzi es halulav l'shus harabim, and by mistake, he forgot it was Shabbos, and he carried the lulav out into the public domain from his house. Potter, he will be exempt from being considered a Shabbos violator, mipnei shotzio b'rishus, because he carried it out b'rishus, meaning with permission, but it doesn't mean literally with permission, but it means b'rishus mitzvah. He carried out in the context of attempting to fulfill a mitzvah. So since in his mind, true, he forgot it was Shabbos, he was preoccupied with the mitzvah of lulav, and he was thinking about how was he going to do the mitzvah, and he forgot that it was Shabbos. So because his mind was preoccupied with a mitzvah, he is exempt from bringing a sacrifice that ordinarily one would bring for an inadvertent violation of Shabbos. Before we continue with the Gemara itself, we glance at the side where we see the No Say the topic heading. 2 points we'll see in the upcoming lines. Ein adam yotzei b'lulav shel chaver, a person does not fulfill his mitzvah of lulav by using his friend's lulav, and matono al menas lahachzir, a concept known as a gift given with the anticipation of it being returned. So if one receives an item under such circumstances whereby the giver says, I'm giving this to you on condition that you return it to me, while the receiver is holding it, is it considered his own? That has ramifications for the mitzvah of lulav on the first day of Sukkot. If someone gives you, you don't own a lulav, and someone else gives you his lulav with the condition that after you use it for the mitzvah, you give it back to the owner, are you, the receiver in fulfillment, have you fulfilled the requirement of lochem, of it being yours? The Gemara, Meno Hani Mili, from where do we know that a person does not fulfill the mitzvah of lulav with a lulav belonging to his friend? Detonu Rabbona. We have a Tanaic source opening with the Pasuk Ulakachtem, which is based on the Pasuk Ulakachtem Lochem B'Yom HaRishon, and we learn from Ulakachtem Shtei Lekicha B'Yad Kol Echod Ve'Echod. It's a mitzvah that's incumbent upon every individual. Lochem means Mishel Lochem. It shall be your own. Lahotzi es hashol ves hagozel, to the exclusion of borrowed or stolen. Mikan omru chachomim, based on this, the chachomim have said, ein adam yotzi yedei chavaso b'yom tov harishon shel chag b'lulavo shel chaver, a person does not fulfill his chovo, his requirement, on the first day of Sukkot with his friend's lulav. Elo im kein nosnoi loy b'matona, unless it was given to him as a gift. So if Mr. A gave a gift of a lulav to Mr. B, so now Mr. B can use that lulav, it's considered his. Umaisa, and a story involving a number of sages that were together on a trip, on a boat. Umaisa, Ramunil, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Loz ben Azariah, Rabbi Akiva, Shohoyu Boyin, Bisfina, they were on a boat, Velohoyo, Lulav, Elul Ramgam Liel Bilvad, Shalokhi Belavzuz. And no one had a lulav except for Ramgam Liel, who purchased it, paying a lot of money, paid 1,000 zuz for his lulav. Not lo Ramgam Liel, Vyotzebo. And it goes without saying that this story is on the, they're on a boat, they're on a seafaring voyage on the first day. They happen to be on the boat, and it happens to be the first day of Sukkot. So the Shlomo Leo takes his lulav and fulfills the mitzvah. V'yotzebo v'nosno Rabbi Yeshua b'matana. He then gave it to Rabbi Yeshua as a gift. Notlo Rabbi Yeshua v'yotzebo. V'nosno Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah b'matana. Rabbi Yeshua took it, fulfilled his mitzvah, and then gave it to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah as a gift. Notlo Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah v'yotzebo v'nosno b'matana. Rabbi Kiva. After Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah fulfilled his mitzvah, he then gave it to Rabbi Kiva as a gift. Not lo Rabbi Akiva v'yatzaboy v'chziru lo Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Akiva then fulfilled his mitzvah and gave it back to Rabbi Gamliel. As we go on in the Gemara will be analyzing a couple of the points here, and we've emphasized these points of analysis with a dashed underline, Loma li lemeimar, you said here, and a couple lines later, Loma li lemeimar hichziroi. Of what significance is there in saying that Rabbi Akiva returned it to Rabbi Gamliel? The Gemara answers, Milsa agav urche komash mlon. We're taught something by the way. Matona amanas lahachsir shmo matona, a gift that one receives conditionally, with the condition that he returns it, is considered a gift. In other words, it's considered yours while it's in your possession. Kiha di omar rova, as in accordance with Rova's teaching. Ha lecho esrog ze amanas shetachzirehu li, a person. Mr. A presents to Mr. B an esrog, and he says, take this esrog, it is yours, on condition that you return it to me. Notlo v'yotzebo. Mr. B takes the esrog and uses it as part of his lulav mitzvah. Hechziro yotza. If Mr. B returns it to Mr. A, so everything is fine, and Mr. B is said to have fulfilled his mitzvah. Lo hechziro, lo yotza. If Mr. B does not return it to Mr. A, so then we say, retroactively, it was never Mr. B's. And therefore, it would be considered stolen while Mr. B was holding it. And hence, he wouldn't be Yotze the mitzvah. Loma li lemeimar, why was it necessary to teach shelokhoi be'elef zuz? It's to be understood that these Tanaic sources are not here just to tell us stories. If something is mentioned, it must be for a purpose. So, of what significance is it that he paid 1,000 zuz for the lulav? Answer, Lahodiacha kama mitzvus chavivos alein, to show us how endeared they are to the mitzvahs, that they're willing to pay so much money for the mitzvah. Omale mor bar Amemar l'Ravashi. The son of Amemar tells Ravashi, Abo tsluye komatsli bay. Here we have a new topic, and on the side of the Gemara we have a topic heading, Achizas lulav udvorim achirim b'shas atfilo. The Gemara will be discussing holding a lulav and other things, other items that one might be holding, and we'll have to see whether it's allowed, while one is davening. The connection between this discussion and what was mentioned just before is in the form of chavivus. We saw chavivus, the chamis is chavivus alehen. We're going to see here the idea of someone holding a lulav while he's davening, and it's as a result of his great affection for the mitzvah. Mace, the Gemara then tells us that the son of Amemar tells Ravashi, Abba tzlui komatz lebe, that means that father, Amemar, held the lulav while he was davening. And Rashi says, if you look in Rashi about halfway down, he says, Hava matzli be, matzli means daven, pray with it. Because of his great affection for it. And this is, as we say, in line with that which we saw just before, in terms of the great expense that was paid, the great amount, the high price, or great amount of money that Rav Gamliel paid for his lulav, because of chavivus hamitzvah. The Gemara, though, asks on this practice of davening Shmona Esrei while holding something. Meisvei. The Tanaic source says, Lo yoichaz odom tfilin biyodoi v'sefer Torah b'cheko v'yispalel. Person should not hold tefillin in his hands, nor a sefer Torah in his bosom, and daven, because it causes a person to be disturbed. He's preoccupied that they shouldn't fall out of his hands, so how can he possibly concentrate on the davening? There are more points that are in this bracketed section that are not relevant to Shmoneh Esrei, but are relevant to the tefillin and Sefer Torah. It says, "V'lo yashtin bohen mayim, v'lo yishan bohem lo shinas keva, v'lo shinas aroi." A person should not urinate while holding his tefillin, nor should he sleep even a nap, and certainly a full fledged sleep while holding the tefillin in his hands. The Omar Shmuel, Sakin Koro, Kikor Umos, Are, Elu, Kayotz Bohen. Where Shmuel adds to the list, he says, a knife, a plate, and Rashi adds a plate that's full with something, a loaf of bread, and cash. All of these are like that which we said, like the tefillin and the Sefer Torah. One should not hold these things while he is davening. So the question is, what about Amemar and his practice of holding the lulav while he was davening? The Gemara answers, there is a difference. Hosam lav mitzvah ninhu v'torid b'hu. All the things mentioned before, outside of the lulav, there is no mitzvah in holding them, and all there is his preoccupation that it might fall. However, hocha, in the case of the lulav, mitzvah ninhu v'lo torid b'hu, is holding them, his holding the lulav is not for security purposes, but it's a mitzvah to hold it, and because of this, because, and once again Rashi says, because of the chavivus hamitzvah, the adoration that he has and the love that he has for the mitzvah, it's not considered a burden for him, and he's not preoccupied with it and its possible falling. Therefore, it doesn't interfere with his ability to concentrate on his davening, his Shmoneh Esrei. Tanya. And we continue with the concept of holding of a lulav in the context of a mitzvah. The source says, Rabbi Lozer tells us that this was the practice of the citizenry of Yerushalayim. Odom yotzim ibeisiv lulav, a better person leaves his house, he's holding his lulav. Holuch beis haknesses, lulav abiyado. He goes to shul, he goes to the synagogue, holding his lulav. Kori kriyashma mispalel, lulav abiyado. Recites the kriyashma and the shmona esrei, and he's still holding his lulav. However, kore v'torah v'nosias kapov manicho agabi karka. In order to read from the Sefer Torah, so you have to have your hands free for the movement, for the rolling of the Sefer Torah, the adjusting of the place for reading, and likewise, if he's a Kohen and he has to do the Birkas Kohanim, we call it duchening, or the priestly blessing, and in that he has to raise his arms, so he can't be holding the lulav in order to hold his hands at the Birkas Kohanim position. So, manicho agabi karka, you place it down on the ground. Holech levakir cholim, the citizens of Yerushalayim, when they would go then to visit the sick, ulenachem avelim, or to comfort the mourners, lulavo biyado, he would go with his lulav. The issue of comforting the mourners in the context of the holiday of Sukkot is something that requires some further analysis, but we're translating the source as it is. Nichnas lebeis hamedrash. Finally, a person one of the citizens of Yerushalayim, he would reach the beis medrash, the place where people study Torah. And in the study of Torah, a person is expected to get very involved and preoccupied with his Torah learning. And as a result of that, he knows that once he starts learning, he was not going to be able to hold his lulav. It might fall out of his hands because of his total preoccupation with his Torah learning. Therefore, Mishagir lulavo biad beno, biad avdo, biad shlucho. He will mishagir as he sends his lulav either through his son or his servant or some type of agent. He sends it home for safe keeping. My komashmon, what does this source tell us? What does it reveal to us? Lodiyacha kamo hoyu zrizin b'mitzvahs, to show us how diligent people were in their fulfillment of mitzvahs. A broad topic that is worthy of a more elaborate discussion based on this. You see that in addition to the basic taking of the lulav and esrog at the point that one recites the bracha, and in addition to the shaking of the lulav during the hallel, there seems to be another aspect of lulav, even if it's not obligatory, but nevertheless, there's a fulfillment of one's taking and carrying and attachment, physical attachment to the lulav beyond the basic two elements that we mentioned, the bracha recitation, where you pick up the lulav and esrog, and the hallel. Exactly what is the nature of that mitzvah is something worthy of analysis. Rabbi Yossi Omer Yom Tov, Rabbi Yossi mentioned in the Mishnah that if the first day of Sukkot coincided with Shabbos and he didn't bring his lulav to shul from Erev Shabbos, but mistakenly carried the lulav from his house to the shul, to the synagogue on Shabbos day itself, so he is not considered a standard Shabbos violator, which ordinarily, one who violates Shabbos b'shogeg inadvertently, by mistake, he brings a sin offering, a korban chatas. Rabbi Yossi says, not so in the case of someone who violated Shabbos in the context of trying to fulfill a mitzvah. Omar Abaye, the Gemara continues at the top of Daf Mem Beis, Loi Shonu Elo Shelo Yotzabo. The exemption that Rabbi Yossi is alluding to is assuming that he hasn't already fulfilled the mitzvah of lulav earlier on that day, on Shabbos. Avol Yotzabo Chayav, if a person had already fulfilled his mitzvah of taking the lulav earlier on Shabbos, and afterwards he carried it out, then he doesn't fall under the exemption of what we call Torud Bidvar Mitzvah, being preoccupied with the fulfillment of a mitzvah when he's already fulfilled it. The Gemara asks, how can you have a situation of Shelo Yotzabo, that he hasn't fulfilled the mitzvah before carrying it out? Ha mida agbe nofak be, as soon as you pick up the lulav, you fulfill the mitzvah. So as soon as you picked it up from your living room table, before going outdoors with it on Shabbos, as soon as you picked it up, you would have fulfilled the mitzvah. That's what the mitzvah of lulav is, to pick it up together with the esrog, hadasim and arovos. You pick them up. That's it. That's the mitzvah. The Mishnah says that, well, even after you picked it up and you walk out with it, you're exempt. So that would be a kasha on Abaye. Abaye says that there's no exemption if you already fulfilled the mitzvah. But every situation of carrying the lulav outside on Shabbos is a case of your having already fulfilled the mitzvah. And Rabbi Yossi says you're exempt. Omar Abaye. You see, Abaye is one and Rava number two. They explain how to understand Rabbi Yossi's scenario. Rabbi Omar Abaye kishahofchoi. if you picked up the lulav upside down, you do not fulfill the mitzvah. So what Rabbi Yossi is speaking about is about a person who picked up the lulav upside down and carried it out to shul. And in shul, in the synagogue, he would straighten things out and be yotzei the mitzvah over there. So in a case like that, so he would be considered ta'or b'dvar mitzvah. He is made a mistake because of his preoccupation with fulfilling a mitzvah which he hasn't fulfilled yet. And once again, I know we're sounding a bit repetitious, but according to Abaye, how is it that he didn't fulfill it immediately because he picked it up upside down? Rava amar afilu tema shelo halchoi. Rava says, even without explaining it thusly, I can give you another scenario where in his picking it up, he hasn't fulfilled the mitzvah immediately. Hacha b'mayaskina, here, what are we dealing with? Kagon shehotzio b'kli. He carried the lulav out in a vessel. In other words, he didn't pick it up directly, but he picked it up with the assistance of some other vessel or element. The Gemara asks, "V'ha Rava hu de'omar l'kicha yidei dover acher shmo l'kicha?" But Rava himself says that your taking of the lulav through an intermediary, in other words, another device where you're not holding the lulav directly, but you're holding it with something else or through something else, that is considered a fulfillment all the same. So how is Rava explaining Rabbi Yossi, where we're trying to set up a scenario where you are carrying it out on Shabbos, not as yet having fulfilled the mitzvah? If you're going to say that he picked it up through an intermediary vessel, that doesn't interfere with his mitzvah fulfillment. He's already fulfilled the mitzvah. The Gemara says, not so. Hani mili, that which Rava said, l'kicha yidei dover acher shmo l'kicha, derech kovud. That's where you picked it up with something that is honorable. And Rashi gives an example of someone who, let us say, wrapped his hand in some fine cloth, and as such, he picked up the lulav. So he's picking up the lulav while his hand is wrapped in cloth. That is derech kovud. Avol derech bizayon lo, but a lulav, let's say, lying in a plate or in a pot, that's not considered honorable. And hence, if that's what the Mishnah is describing, that's what Rabbi Yossi is describing, someone who picked up the lulav while it was in a pot, and he carried it out to shul, he carried it out to the base, to the shul, the synagogue, that way he would be exempt, because he was torud bedvar mitzvah, was preoccupied with a mitzvah matter, as opposed to something totally optional. Omar Rav Huna, Omer Hoya Rav Yossi. Now Rav Huna carries Rav Yossi further, and he says Rav Yossi used to say, "Oyla sa'oif shenimtzeis bein agapayim, v'kosovur chata sa'of hi v'ochla poter." Oyla sa'oif is a bird offering, but as its name indicates, it's an oyla. It shows us it's completely consumed; it is not to be eaten. The oyla sa'oif is that type of bird sacrifice, which is thrown into the fire. No one eats of it. Now, here is a case where there was an oil sof that got mixed up with other bird offerings. That's Nimtzeis Bein Agapayim. It got mixed up with other bird offerings. The Kosavur Chatos Ha'ofi. And he thought that it was a sin offering bird, a bird sin offering, which is something that is eaten. The ochla, and he ate the ola sof, thinking that it was a chata sof. Potter, he is considered exempt from the me'ila violation. When one receives personal benefit from items that are sanctified, so he is said to be in violation of me'ila. And as a result of that violation, the violator is expected to bring a sacrifice, a korban osher me'ilos. In this case, where what he ate was an olas of, thinking that it was a chatas of, so he was to'eh b'dvar mitzvah. There is a mitzvah to eat a chatas of, and he thought that's what he was doing. he ended up eating an Olah Sof, which is forbidden, he nevertheless is exempt. The Gemara asks, "My komash malon, what is Rav Huna teaching us?" The Tov b'dvar mitzvah poter, that one whose mistake is in the context of trying to fulfill a mitzvah, that that causes exemption from the need to bring an atoning sacrifice. Hainu hach. Well, this is the same as Rabbi Yossi in the Mishnah. So what is Rav Huna adding in his quote of Rabbi Yossi that I wouldn't know already? Answer. Mahu detema. I would have thought hosam hu detobit var mitzvah potter hainu de ovad mitzvah. There, in the case of the Mishnah, where he made a mistake in carrying the lulav out on Shabbos to shul, but there eventually took it to shul, and there he fulfilled the mitzvah. He did a mitzvah. So because at the end of the day, in the final analysis, bottom line, the person did a mitzvah, so that would be reason for exempting him from bringing a atoning sacrifice. Avol, hocha. But here in the, where he ate the Olah Sof, under the mistaken impression that it was a Chatas Of, but at bottom line, what did he do? He ate something he shouldn't eat. Aval hocha detob edvar mitzvah v'lo ovad mitzvah. He didn't do a mitzvah. He ate an Olah Sof. Aim alo. I would think that he's not exempt from bringing an atoning sacrifice. Kol mash malon, this is what Rav Huna tells us in the name of Rabbi Yossi, that even under these circumstances where he didn't do a mitzvah at the end, he ate an Olah Sof, which is not the fulfillment of any mitzvah, he still is exempt. The Gemara asks, Meisvei, Rabbi Yossi Yomar Shechid Es HaTomid, a person who slaughtered the morning, the daily sacrifice, the Tomid, there was a Tomid Shel Shachar and a Tomid Shel Berabayim, She'eno Mavukar Kehilchaso, however, it wasn't checked to be mum free, blemish free. B'Shabbos, and he did this on Shabbos. The Shabbos is a day that a person is expected to, the Beis Hamikdash is expected to offer daily sacrifices, Korban Tomid, Tomid Shel Shachar, Tomid Shel Ben Abayim. Those were offered even on Shabbos. However, here we have someone that shechted. He slaughtered an unchecked for blemish animal. Now, being that it has a blemish, so it's unfit to be a sacrifice. The fellow, you would imagine, was anticipating doing a mitzvah to offer the Korban Tomid, which is offered on Shabbos. And yet it says here, if he did this on Shabbos, Chayav Chatas v'tzoch Tomid Acher, he has violated Shabbos because he did a worthless slaughtering. So he did an act of slaughtering which involves the taking of life, Netilas Neshama, which is forbidden on Shabbos unless it were an actual fulfillment of the Korban Tomid. But he didn't fulfill it because it turned out that it had a mum, it was blemished. So he needs to seek atonement. He brings a chatas, v'tzorch tomid achir, and a replacement korban tomid must be brought. What do we see over here? We see that someone who is toeh b'dvar mitzvah and doesn't do the mitzvah, Rabbi Yossi is machmir. Rabbi Yossi says chayev chatas. He does have to bring an atonement offering. So this would be a kasha on Rav Huna, who tried to convince us that under all circumstances of Toya B'dvar Mitzvah, even if you don't do the mitzvah, you are exempt. Here, he was Toya B'dvar Mitzvah, but did not do the mitzvah. He didn't get Tomid credit. And we see he's not exempt. Omar Lay. So Rav Huna would answer, Bar Mino Dahi. This case of the Tomid is exceptional. It doesn't reflect the cases Rav Huna was talking about. Once again, we read the Omar Le Bar Mino Dahi, with the exception of that case, Da Itmar Allah, it was said concerning that case of the Tomid Sheinu Mavukar, Amar Rav Shmuel bar Chatoi, Amar Rav Hamnuno Sabo, Amar Rav Yitzchok bar Ashir, Amar Rav Huna, Amar Rav. Eventually, Rav is quoted. Kegoin Shevioi Milishka She'enon Mevukoren. The animal was brought from a lishka, as a chamber containing animals that were not checked for being blemish-free to begin with. Rashi, of course, adds a lot more. We just translated the Gemara, but what exactly is the difference in this Rabbi Yossi case of the Shochet Tamid Shena Mavukar, as opposed to the fellow eating an Oila Sa'oif? In both cases, a mitzvah is not performed at the end, and yet, in the case of the Oila Sa'oif, the one who ate it and derived pleasure from eating that which he shouldn't have eaten is exempt from a korban. And here we have someone who didn't do the mitzvah, he shechted a blemished tomid, and we see that he is obligated to bring an atoning offering. So what's the difference? We look at Rashi. Rashi is found under the Gemara text, fourth line under the Gemara text, the first of the widest lines. Milishko sheinu mevukoren. The animals brought from a chamber of containing animals that were not checked. The Ein Zeh Toi B'Dvar Mitzvah. This is not to be categorized as Toi B'Dvar Mitzvah. She B'Tloim She B'Lishka Zu Eino Torud. All of the sheep in this particular chamber are not on his mind to begin with. They're not checked to be blemish free. She'enon Oindim Lahakrovo Lioschored Aleihem Mos Hayikrivu. They're not even candidates for being sacrificed, which would give rise for a person's preoccupation thinking, when am I going to offer from them? Even the concept of maybe he's time conscious, and that's he's preoccupied with the passing of the time, which would render it such that he couldn't offer the sacrifice anymore. That's not appropriate to apply over here. Shekorov lemezid hu, this person who brought the animal from the chamber of unchecked animals, he is practically speaking mezid. Mezid is the is what we call intentional as opposed to inadvertent. It's almost intentional. He wasn't careful in distinguishing between the different chambers. So because of this, we'll call this grave, in Hebrew we would use the word pshia, malpractice, is negligence, grave case of negligence. He doesn't deserve to be classified as Toye B'Dvar Mitzvah. And hence, under these circumstances where he went to the inappropriate chamber in the first place to fetch the animal, Rabbi Yossi does not exempt him based on Toye B'Dvar Mitzvah, and therefore he is Chayov Chatos. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.